Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast on ruggedizing COTS components for ISR applications in extreme environments. Today's speaker is Jason Wade, Vice President of Product Marketing at Z Microsystems. My name is John McHale, Editorial Director of Military Embedded Systems Magazine and moderator for today's event. The event will consume about 30 minutes, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. Please take note of the Enlarge Slides button on your screen. By clicking on this button, you will be able to view the slides full screen. You can also click on the Forward to a Friend button to send an email to a request for this event. You'll also find in your console window a button that enables you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address them during the closing Q&A session. If you have a question intended on a specific topic or a specific slide that the speaker referenced during his presentation, please note so note at the beginning of your question. Otherwise, just make your questions directly to Jason. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the eCast. Note that as much as we'd like to, we may not be able to get to all your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. This eCast will be posted online today, and an audio podcast will be available as well. At the end of the presentation, there also will be a closing survey. Please feel free to participate. Now, without further ado, I turn it over to Jason Wade. Jason?
Thank you, John. Hello, everybody. Good morning or afternoon, wherever you may be. My name is Jason Wade. I will be speaking through this webinar today. I hope you understand that one of the challenges of a webinar is that there is no audience feedback or participation verbally during my talk. So I strongly encourage you, as I'm speaking, if something is unclear, please post a question, and I certainly will go back and hit on those topics later on in our Q&A session. So I work with Z Microsystems. We've been in the ruggedized computing market for over 25 years. This webinar is something that we feel that we can speak with some authority to, because a bulk of our business is really in how we take COTS components and ruggedize them. And the ISR applications are not only a strategic focus for our company, but also really the bulk of our business. So through this presentation today, I'm hoping to share a little bit about, you know, what we've been doing over the past 20 years and kind of give a little tidbits about the challenges of incorporating COTS components inside the rugged marketplace, and specifically for ISR applications. So as we go through the presentation today, some of my goals are to really talk about some of the recent trends in the ISR markets and kind of the applications and what we're doing about that for COTS equipment. I also want to take you a little bit through the key design considerations for when you're building rugged computer systems or display systems in certain cases, how to build those for COTS, utilizing COTS for these applications. And at the end, kind of which is really a critical point, is designing something for COTS, for rugged COTS, is important, but really validating and testing it is key, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that what's fielded meets what's stated and what's specified. So that being said, I want to kind of talk a little bit about the challenge and why we're in the business that we're in, and why I'm imagining a lot of you are attending this webinar, is because there's a little bit of a conflicting environment between COTS equipments and rugged fielded environments. So COTS equipments, you know, as its name states, are commercial off-the-shelf equipment. So these are components that are designed for lab use, for server rooms, for home offices, for desk offices. But the reality is that COTS equipment is what the military and the bulk of the industry want to utilize in their applications. And the reason they want to utilize these are, well, one, COTS equipments is the cheapest that you can get. They're mass-produced. The motherboards are made in hundreds of thousands or millions. They're not made one-off, so you can take advantage of economies of scale. It's definitely a lower-risk solution if you utilize COTS equipment. There are opportunities where, you know, if something doesn't work and a COTS motherboard doesn't work, there's multiple options out there in the environment. Plus, this is what, at the end of the day, folks are developing software applications around their desktop systems. And if it works on their desktop, they want that to be working and fielded in the deployed environment. So, of course, the challenge is, you know, here we have a motherboard that was made for example, a home office, and now this needs to go into an aircraft, a shipboard application, into some sort of on-the-move computing environment. And really, that's just, it's difficult because companies like Dell, who might be a leader in repackaging COTS equipment, their focus isn't on keeping these motherboards sustainable for a shock and vibe requirement or a land-based vehicle that might have lots of radios, so there might be interference. And so what we're going to do today is kind of talk a little bit about these challenges and, again, look at the trends and where we're going with this. So kind of an example of COTS equipment that I wanted to bring up is, you know, Dell computers are very good computers, and that's what folks are deploying, but they cannot physically handle the beating that an on-the-move computing application can take. And so as we'll see here in a couple slides, there are things that you can do to make sure that the same motherboard that might be used in that HP or Dell or Compaq system and make sure that can work in a deployed environment. So I'm going to start off with some recent trends right here, and we'll talk about how these recent trends are really changing the way that COTS computing is going. So some of the recent trends we're looking at right now are in ISR applications, everything is getting bigger, faster, and smarter. And folks are providing, folks being, you know, industry, are providing software applications that take an intense amount of computing requirements. So COTS servers out there are multi-core, hex cores, multi-socketed systems. So you're seeing an increase of these computer solutions that are really required to handle thermal envelopes that exceed where they were a few years ago. And kind of in parallel with that, there are trends towards moving that processing away from typical CPUs into different formats, such as FPGAs or GPUs. And so what we're seeing is kind of a shift in industry towards high-end computation, and the way that they're handling this high-end computation is either in multi-cores, FPGAs, or GPUs. Now, GPUs and FPGAs are interesting because they're really suited well for handling parallel processing. The challenge with that, of course, is that there's a shift in how the product needs to be designed, how code needs to be written. And so CUDA and VHDL are emerging as high-end languages to be utilizing high-end processing with COTS equipment. But what this means, though, is that we're now putting a lot more high-end processing into COTS system. So high-end graphics cards, for example, are some of them generate over 200 watts of power. So this is a serious challenge, and really it needs to be addressed because thermal mitigation is a key component of making sure that systems can operate in the field. So I'll do a quick application that talks about the transition into high-end parallel processing. And one of the ISR applications that is becoming increasingly more common and popular and used very frequently in the military is tracking and moving objects. So the tracking and moving objects, at one point, say about 5 years ago, met with a customer who was utilizing tracking and moving objects using 20 dual Xeon systems. Now this technology, utilizing the CUDA-based programming and FPGAs, has shrunken down into a single system. The challenge with that is there's now serious processing power going on in one box. And so, of course, the concern for thermal mitigation is of utmost concern for not only the customer, but for designers of COTS equipment. How do you make sure that these items are properly regulated to ensure sustained operation? So kind of there's different ways that you can handle thermal mitigation in COTS servers. One way, of course, is to make sure that you know what's hot and what's getting hot. And through the design of COTS servers, you can add thermal sensors and system monitoring. And that's really crucial because at the end of the day, you don't want a system that is going max out capacity full bore with fans if it's not required. Conversely, if the system starts heating up, you want to make sure that those fans adjust. And so one approach is to incorporate inside your architecture thermal sensors, which are constantly monitoring, you know, the input and the exhaust. And if there's a sustained delta, then that can trigger an increase in fan speed. Which is equally important is identifying where the hotspots are in the system. So there's a couple ways you can do that. One of the early ways in design is through thermal modeling. SolidWorks has modules for that as well. And you can make sure you understand where really the hotspots are inside the system. And as you're designing and testing system, thermal sensors are used in that as well. But what you want to make sure you're doing is when you identify and find those hotspots, that you are properly cooling those areas by directing fans in that area. So if you look in that image, actually it's kind of hard to see on the small side, I apologize. There are specific fans that are directed towards PCI slots to make sure there's proper airflow over those cards. A very critical part of thermal management is really cables. Cables, if they're not properly contained, are bogging down and blocking tons of potential airflow. So cable management is key, having PEMs along the bottom and just as similarly along the top as well to create a clear path for those fans to blow air. And then, of course, if you look at this system, especially for GPU or FPGA that go on PCI Express cards, the hot spots are contained where those riser cards are. So you really want to make sure that there's baffles and cooling is directed for proper exhaust out of the system. So kind of going to the next slide, one of the common buzzwords that you'll hear in the industry right now is SWAP, size, weight, and power. And just kind of analogous to the concept of COTS, where COTS equipment is trying to be deployed in battlefield environments, there's also an analogy of the requirements of the customer wanting increased computational power, increased GPUs, but the power envelope that's available, the size that's available, is becoming more and more constrained. So this is a challenge in the industry, and COTS actually is providing us a really good way to maximize our efficiency. And also, in addition to maximizing efficiency, it's enabling us to come up with creative solutions to perhaps provide a more flexible and robust system. So one of the comments that I hear frequently from our customer base is, especially for airborne applications, is that if you can save me a pound, every pound counts, because that 1 pound is an extra pound of fuel. And so that's something that is really pervasive in our thought process as we're designing, making sure that every time we can save, even if it's a sliver of weight, understand that that means an extra pound of fuel, which means the mission can go on longer and can be greater. So how can COTS really be leveraged to maximize size, weight, and power? Well, it's really taking an approach of a different level of repackaging COTS. So if you look at motherboards in this example specifically, there are different motherboard form factors out there in the market. There's the ATX, the extended ATX. Those are the common larger motherboards that are in desktop type applications or in server type. But there's also other smaller standards that are ideally suited for SWAP. In this application, we're talking about a COM Express module. And a COM Express module is a really handy solution for COTS because, one, it's an industry standard. So there's lots of companies out there that leverage COM Express. Two, it's tiny. It's only about a 5-inch by 3 3/4-inch motherboard, and it's a full-up motherboard. What really is unique about a COM Express and why it's so suited for ISR applications is that the users can determine, you know, what type of I/O is required, and then you can design a baseboard that leverages it. So rather than utilizing a motherboard that's designed for a desktop system with, you know, a handful of parallel ports and for old printers and 8 USBs, an ISR application might be very specific. So you can design a baseboard that really is specific around your application, and by doing that, you're maximizing the efficiency because you're only designing and building a product around what is needed for an ISR application. So what else is nice about it is because it's an industry standard, that baseboard you design, that can then be leveraged to support a host of different modules. And by different modules, it can be depending on what your application is. There are some applications out there where folks need the high-end multi-core processors, and there's core i7s that are available. Conversely, if power is a more critical concern than processing capability, you can add a Celeron. So you can save up to 70 watts of power on that one module by not changing the form factor and having a common packaging. So it's a really elegant solution in terms of creating a very modular solution. And where else is ComExpress is nice is, I mentioned, it's a full-up motherboard. So if you design a baseboard that can take a PCI Express slot, then you can incorporate the GPU so you can have the high-end computing requirements that leverage CUDA-based programming inside a common packaging. And so our concept behind utilizing ComExpress is, how do we create a very modular and versatile packaging where we create units that can be mixed and matched and variable based on specific deployed environments? So we'll take the ComExpress, put them in packaging, and then create a modular chassis. And so at the end of the day, what we're coming out with in this example is we're having in 4U of space, we can have up to 7 computers. If folks need GPU processing, we can just take up 2 slots. So you can have 3 modules with GPUs and 1 module with a Celeron, for example. And that will give you in 4U of space, 4U for high-end computers. So another recent trend that we're seeing is increased situational awareness. The amount of information and data that is coming in the environment is increasing daily, weekly, monthly. So prior, IS&R was typically considered one camera looking at something and they were analyzing data that. The transition in the ISR world is there are multiple cameras with lots of different information. And this creates a serious challenge for the end user, one, because of all the data that's collected, and two, how is an operator or user supposed to be able to absorb all this information? And so there's a couple approaches that we can take with COTS equipment that I'm going to step through real quick. And the first is actually the prior parts of the applications were centered around computer servers, and now I'm going to talk a little bit about displays. And increasing situational awareness with displays is really critical. And one of the examples I showed you right there is a ground control station. Now, a challenge in displays and COTS equipment is that there are different panel sizes and panels change constantly. So it's very challenging to design around a COTS system, which is why it's so critical, really, to be able to control the electronics through a video controller in the back of a COTS display. This will enable you as a designer or as a user to have a consistent look and feel across different panel sizes and different changes in panels. So, for example, in this image, there's a combination of 21-inch, 17-inch, and 24-inch displays. All of those displays have the same controller in the back. And the advantage that can have is you can switch those images to different displays, and the controller is agnostic as to what the source resolution is and can scale to the different panels. Similarly, the reality of the LCD market is 24 inches go end of life constantly. When by having your own controller, you're able to support the variability in the market. And so that's critical because of end-of-life issues. So 24-inch panels, I think in our same packaging, we've gone through 6 panels already. Yet from the user perspective, it's really transparent because there's no known change to either the menus, to the functionality. It's just how do you manage the COTS item in that packaging? So kind of a quick aside, and that's dealing with controllers is how can you maximize the efficiency of the COTS equipment. And so, as we mentioned, there's lots of video streaming. What can you do about that and to make the user, you know, better utilizing the video resources? And one way is there's algorithms out there that utilize in FPGA enhancement functionality, so you can actually improve the visual appearance of video. You can see through fog and haze. There's the ability to improve through contrast enhancement the details in sand and dust and dirty environments. And also by utilizing your own controller, you have the ability to display multiple picture-in-picture feeds. So you're able to consolidate on one display a lot of these live video feeds into one common view. So this is kind of the, you know, some of the recent trends in where the industry is going with ISNR and COTS. But what's really important is making sure that COTS solutions are designed for the deployable and rugged markets that a lot of military customers specifically are using. And so what we're working on right now is we're working on right now is how do we define the ruggedization of COTS computers and how do you design for deployed environments. And we're going to kind of in the next few slides take you through some of the key things. Thermal, EMI, humidity, dust, shock and vibe, and altitude. Now these are kind of the basics of ruggedization, and there's MIL standards for each of those that we can go into if requested. But what we'll do is we'll kind of step through real quick. You know, how do you design rugged computers around to look at really the thermal mitigation? So I talked briefly about it earlier. It's very critical to have some sort of feedback mechanism internally to know if the system is getting hot, and if it's getting hot, to make sure the fan speed increase. It's also very critical to make sure that there is front-to-back airflow with air baffles and fan inlets directing air to the hot spots. And as we mentioned earlier as well, that the cable management is critical because cables can be such an impedance to airflow, it will practically render all your other design criteria ineffective. So what else is critical, too, is maximizing the airflow and exhaust inlets. There are industry standards. One of them is an octagonal hole design pattern. And really, this is a key feature in design because it maximizes surface area while also ensuring the maximum structural integrity. So you can, by designing proper air inlet and exhaust hole patterns, you can increase your throughput through air up to 50% versus if you just punch holes. It's not efficient to punch holes. You have to make sure you're designing it in a proper, proven industry standard. And of course, the other challenge is for systems that don't have the ability for air inlet, how can you get heat out? And really the best way to do that is to heat sink to a conductive chassis, aluminum, and to make sure the surface area is increased to the fullest extent possible. And that, of course, is a challenge, and it's more expensive, but it's absolutely required. You need to make sure that there's enough surface area to pull the heat away from the internal electronics and to ensure sustainable and consistent thermal results. So kind of going on into the next section of ruggedization, it's dealing with the shock and vibe mitigation. So shock and vibe is absolutely critical to every ISR application. Helicopters are just a gigantic vibration table. Vehicles, aircrafts, all constantly are battling shocks and vibes. So when you're designing for shock, you got to make sure, first of all, that you are very prudent with how you're holding PCI cards down. PCI cards come in variable sizes and shapes, so it's absolutely critical to make sure that there is PCI hold-down brackets that that are adjustable and have and can support all three axes, the X, Y, and Z axis. A big trend in COTS computing are dual redundant power supplies. Very critical that you make sure that those power supplies are locked in place and don't necessarily evacuate under a serious shock load. And as we'll talk about earlier, this stuff isn't necessarily inherent in the design. It's really in the validation that you learn some of these tricks of the trade. And I'm just kind of sharing a little bit of our lessons learned. And then also looking at, you know, the structural support, machine pieces, strong aluminum, having support bars throughout, really ensures the structural rigidity of the system so it can handle the shock and vibe that the customer base really utilizes. So another critical problem is really EMI and EMC. So computers and displays, the last thing you want those to do is to interfere with the radio communications in an ISR application. And similarly, last thing you want is radios to interfere with the computers or displays as they're typically generating critical information. So what can you do to help with EMI, EMC prevention? Well, the first is, of course, metal enclosures. But even more importantly is making sure that you're having a proper Faraday cage and that the masking and the silk screening that goes on the covers is done properly. And by properly, I mean you need to make sure there's metal-to-metal contact. So proper masking is very critical, and you can ask our QA team here, constant inspection to make sure that at the end of the day when our vendors are powder coating, that they are masking properly. So when we assemble, we have metal-to-metal contact, and we can ensure a proper Faraday cage. Of course, there's filters on power supplies. You can either buy COTS filters, or you can work with COTS manufacturers and to incorporate EMI filters. But this will definitely enable units to meet the 461 mil standard 461 requirements. And then kind of a third trick of the trade is need to make sure that the I.O. connectors are grounded to the chassis. You need to have a proper ground. Otherwise, you're not going to gain any value and you'll lose the robustness of EMI and EMC prevention. So that's kind of talking you through the key ones, but really you're only as strong as the weakest link, and it's really critical in terms of altitude, humidity, and dust to really focus on these fine details as well. So dust, especially in the deployed environments of Iraq or Afghanistan, now, the dust out there is like talc. So what can you do to mitigate that dust? Because we've seen systems come back that are just disgusting. And the way you can do that is to make sure you have removable filters. You need to make sure that the filters are properly filtered in terms of being able to take in the fine talc and the dust. And these get dirty, so they have to be removable and cleanable. Conformal coating is key, and that's actually going to be key across the dust, humidity, and altitude. Conformal coating prevents, protects the sensitive electronics. And, of course, there's sealing the modules. That's definitely the most robust of all solutions. For example, hard drives that we design and manufacture are sealed, so there's no exposed plates or spinning drives, as well as you can enclose COM Express modules, or you can have fully sealed units as well, and that, of course, handles the dust issue. Humidity is a major leak concern, especially on naval deployed applications or on aircrafts going into tropical environments. Conformal coating can be conducted on motherboards, on PCI cards, and there's different conformal coating applications. But really, there's lots of companies out there that do it, and it provides the most robust solution for humidity. And then looking at displays in particular, a lot of customers in ISR use displays in high altitude situations. So the key for displays is really to make sure you're focusing on the high voltage areas and that those high voltage areas are are properly insulated or protected. Insulations can be in the form of conformal coating, it can be in the form of potting, and it can be in the form of adding physical insulators. What you're really trying to do is take those high voltage lines and make sure you're preventing any type of arcing. So once you have the design process done, you know, what are the next steps? And really, at the end of the day, what you're trying to get is the qualification test successfully run. But prior to that, there is a lengthy period of time called design verification testing. And the design verification testing is really done to prove out the design and to make sure that everything is in proper order so when you get to the certification, you will meet it. Some of the challenges, however, are, for example, a mil-spec humidity 461F humidity test may take 8 days. Well, for design verification, you might not want to be taking 8 days to run a test only to find that it fails in day seven. What you'll probably do is do higher intensity and shorter duration. Same with shock and vibe. Rather than doing a 40G test for 6 hours on an axis, you might do 60G for 2 hours. So you're really kind of looking for the breaking points. So by the time you get to the qualification stage, to the mil qualification, you have confidence in your system and you know that it's going to pass that test. So really, at the end of the day, you want and your goal should always be to have that mil certification be a rubber stamp. Any of the issues need to come out in the design verification stage. And really, the design verification stage, if you're looking at a project schedule, that's going to be, the 2-3 month time frame window versus the qualification, which can be done probably in, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So I kind of been and stepping through and breezing through how COTS come into a fielded environment. And so really what we're coming to is, there's ways that you can repackage COTS. You can design for the robust environment, but most importantly, you need to validate for the change, for the design, and make sure it can handle these rugged environments. And at the end of the day, it is possible, it is doable, and it is very commonly used to have ruggedized products to be used in the ISR applications. So again, one of my challenges here is as I have no audio or visual feedback from the audience, so I'm not sure exactly what I needed to spend more time on or what I could have spent less time on, but perhaps in a Q&A session you can kind of pinpoint areas that you'd like me to expand on, and I'd be happy to answer to the best of my ability. So John, if you could maybe help moderate that and let me know some of the open questions from our audience.
Thanks, Jason. Excellent presentation. Now, as Jason mentioned, we'll get started with the Q&A. And as we're asking these questions, please feel free to submit more. Jason's more than happy to sift through them all. Now, our first question is, what is the best way to manage component and system obsolescence and the changing military requirements with COTS technology?
Yeah, and, the reality of COTS technologies is that they go end of life, and that is just the nature of the beast, and that's part of a challenge of being a provider of COTS equipment is how you design for that. So there's two ways, I'll address both servers and displays. The way you do it in servers is you pick a form factor that you're going to design your product around. So I'll use our rugged servers, for example. We will design around extended ATX form factor motherboards. And that really encompasses, 90% of the technologies out there. And so if you create a common, space in your design for that extended ATX form factor motherboard, you're able to quickly refresh. But what's really important is, communicating to the customer community what it is that they're selecting and really the time frame for selecting that. So, for example, we use a lot of Supermicro motherboards. We know that the X9s are going to be coming online in 2012 and will be around for 3 years. So if a customer comes to us today and says they need a motherboard, well, we need to really speak with them and understand their application and their requirements because it might not make sense to be fielding an X8 motherboard today when the program might kick off in 9 months or a year. So really, it's looking at, for servers, it's looking about creating a common footprint that can support the versatile boards in the environment and really communicating back to the customer and understanding their requirements and program needs.
Thanks, Jason. Here's another question. How can a buyer judge what level of ruggedness they need and how do they specify it? And that's an interesting question because it echoes what I've heard from others in the industry about how they're trying to push it. What is rugged enough? Does it need to be super, super rugged if the application doesn't really merit it? Can you take that question?
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, at the end of the day, when we're speaking with customers and they want to know, you know, why would they buy a server from us rather than from HP, and we don't want to sell. If someone can choose between an HP solution or a Zmicro, for example, solution, we don't necessarily want to sell them a Zmicro because it doesn't make sense, because our systems are more expensive because they're, you know, inherently they're designed and they're tested differently. But at the end of the day, it depends on what the environment is. Most major programs, they'll have, especially military-type programs, they'll have detailed specifications and requirements doc that will detail the standards that must be met for these servers. And if there's no reference to, you know, MIL standard 810G or MIL standard 167 or, you know, EMI for 461F, then it probably doesn't make sense to look into a rugged solution. Conversely, you know, it depends on the critical nature of your application. If you're in a robust environment and a failure means that, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars was wasted because you just manned an aircraft to go up in a crew, and there's a failure because you didn't select a rugged system, then, you know, it's really doing a value add judgment as to, you know, what's the risk you want to assume with having a failure.
Thanks, Jason. Next question from the audience. Can you talk a little bit more about conformal coding?
Yeah, sure. So I'm not sure if you're referring to the types of conformal coding or the conformal coding application process. So maybe I can just touch on both of those real quick. So conformal coding, really the concept behind it is there's different types of conformal coding. There's a Parylene. And what those conformal codings will do is they will need to be applied to, I'll just use the motherboard because it's an easy example. The conformal coding will need to be applied to the motherboard, and really what that's doing is that's preventing, that's providing a sealant or, you know, a coating over sensitive electronics. Sensitive electronics include, you know, ball grid arrays, BGAs, areas where if moisture gets in, there could be a short and a failure. And really the way you want to handle conformal coding is it takes someone with an engineer with some expertise, but really you need to go in and you need to define the specific areas that there needs to be a masking. So you need to make sure that, for example, you want to mask memory, the memory DIMM slots on a motherboard. And the conformal coding vendor, there's tons of them out there that do conformal coding on regularly, will take those drawings, and the bulk of their effort is not in the actual spraying, because that's just analogous to spray painting a trash can. But the most labor-intensive part of conformal coding is masking off those sensitive components that can't be filled in or it would interfere with the operation of the system. I'm not sure if that answers the question. If it doesn't, please advise, and I can get back with more detail.
Thanks, Jason. I think you mentioned one of the questions you answered earlier mentioned you get requests about YU over HP, and this next question is, how much more do rugged systems cost compared to similar commercial-grade systems? I mean, what's the difference in price? So you're getting the rugged, but how much more is it costing the user?
Yeah, and it definitely costs more, and the reason it costs more is, one, rugged systems are not built in the hundreds of thousands, so there's not the economies of scale that go along with that. It's hard to say. I would say 2x is probably 2 to 3x is probably a reasonable expectation for looking at rugged systems. And of course, that can go up quickly if there are additional requirements, such as specific tests that need to be run. But you got to remember, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, because whereas, you know, Dell or HP might ship 100,000 of those units, you know, a rugged server might be shipped in the, you know, thousands over the lifetime of that specific product.
Thanks, Jason. Next question from the audience. Do you work with aftermarket repair facilities to maintain failed or returned equipment?
Well, you can. If the question is specific to Z-Micro, we've tried a couple different solutions for aftermarket repair. You know, what we've done is we've worked with Army contracts that have handled that repair. We've worked with customers to have unique warranties that, you know, for example, one of our ISR server applications, we have a pool of servers that are in our customer service, and as one comes in, we ship out a new one and then repair it and then put that one back into the pool. Or there's working with, like,
Army Depot, yeah.
Yeah, Army Depot. We can work with them for they'll handle a lot of that repair and support as well. So, you know, for us in our business model, we prefer to handle the maintenance and support because if, for example, if we control that, we can, if there's trends, we can see and be able to recognize areas for design improvements. But, you know, we're always about what does the customer want and what makes the most sense for the customer, and we can work on handling that.
Thanks, Jason. I have a quick question regarding some of the rugged talks you were talking earlier about different coatings. So I'm talking, also talking about the cooling issues you mentioned with the processors and such. Have you guys had much requests for liquid cooling at all? Have you delved into that much?
Yeah, we have. We have not implemented liquid cooling. We are familiar with the technology, and it's a very good technology. One of the challenges that we had with the liquid cooling was really designing a system that was able to handle the shock and vibration requirements. So now that being said, I don't know how the technology's advanced in the couple years since we've researched it, but liquid cooling is a technology that is very good at helping evacuate heat, and that along with heat pipes. You know, liquid cooling and heat pipes are kind of different approaches to drawing heat out more efficiently, and both of those are, you know, it just really depends on the customer's application, but that should, of course, be a consideration for ways of mitigating thermals.
Thanks, Jason. Before I get to the next question from the audience, just to remind the audience to keep sending your questions in. Still have time for some more. This question is, a request. Please comment on tin whisker risk.
Sure. You know, so that's tin whiskers is, of course, an increasingly, I would say, increasingly greater issue, especially with the requirements of RoHS, due to the, you know, the challenges of incorporating, you know, lead-free solder. You know, part of that really is making sure that in the design, you're cognizant of the type of components and how the components are soldered and attached. In the validation stage, you're really looking for weaknesses in the circuit boards where that might be a risk. If that's a large concern or if that's an acknowledged risk, then we might want to work with a customer for stress screening. So rather than do a one-time validation on a suite of systems, validate every product as it comes off the production line through, you know, some sort of shock and vibe test. If tin whiskers is, you know, is identified as a critical risk, it might not necessarily be. It's just really a case-by-case basis.
Thanks, Jason. How much Can rugged systems be expected to last longer than commercial systems?
Yeah, I mean, I say for sure. You know, looking at one of our customer examples, we had a solution for them. Unfortunately, the time frame for delivery was outside their window. I think we needed 90 days to get them a solution, and they need something in a week. So they went out and purchased Dell servers, which I understand they had to do it because they had to demonstrate their technology to a customer. And they put it in the back of a vehicle, took it through a course, and in one lap around the track, the systems fell apart. Conversely, they've been using our systems now on that same track for over 3 years. So if rugged systems are designed to go in rugged environments, they'll definitely last longer. You know, conversely, if rugged systems are sitting in a test lab next to a commercial system, then, you know, I would say that it probably would, the expectations are that the rugged and commercial systems would last about the same amount of time.
Thanks, Jason. Next question from the audience. How do you use Intel parts and achieve extended temperatures?
Yeah, and that's definitely a very common question, and something that we take very seriously in our design. So a lot of Intel products are you know, spec'd for 0 to 50 C. And so what we'll do is we'll validate that through our thermal testing here in-house. Where it gets more challenging is if, for example, customers need to go below 0C, at which case we'll need to look at alternate ways to increase the range of operation through heaters is one. But at the end of the day, it's really designing and testing. Because if we're going beyond the manufacturer's spec, which happens throughout the industry, it's really important to make sure that the design has been proven through validation testing. And then again, there's been instances where we've worked with customers who have operations that are below the OEM specs, and we'll work with ESS testing. As products come off the production floor, we'll put those through. Perhaps for the example I'm thinking of is a thermal test. They needed to operate at 0C. The motherboard was rated at 5C. And so we had to go through and test every system as it came off our production floor and make sure it would operate. And some did and some didn't. And the ones that didn't, that was just a cost that had to be absorbed because that's part of the business of dealing with providing COTS equipment in rugged environments.
Thanks, Jason. Next question, and this looks like it'll probably be the last question. Is every system thoroughly tested, or is it just a sample of systems off the manufacturing line that gets put through?
Yeah, and I kind of touched on that one. That's really a case-by-case basis. It really depends on what the customer requirements are, and you know, and what we do is we want to make sure we're meeting the customer's expectations and the commitments. So if the customer you know, comes to us and says it is absolutely critical that let me make sure I understand the question. Every system is thoroughly tested. Every system is not necessarily put through environmental stress testing, and that's on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes that's done, sometimes that's not. But yes, every unit goes through you know, manufacturing acceptance test. Every product line will go through intense validation testing to ensure, you know, robust, rugged characteristics. And on a case-by-case basis, every unit off our production floor will go through environmental stress testing.
Okay. Thank you, Jason.
All right. Is that it?
That's the end of our Q&A, and that brings us right up to our time limit, a little under our time limit, but I'd like to thank Jason Wade, NZ Microsystems, and everyone who is following along remotely to the event. This eCast will be posted online today. Please note that an audio podcast-only version will be available as well, And you can also see online that if you have contact information, if you want to contact Jason and Z Microsystems, their information is available on the last slide there. And please feel free to stick around and answer our closing survey. And I look forward to seeing all of you on future Open Systems webcasts. Thanks for attending. Goodbye.